call this meeting to order at 7:07. All board members are present except for Laurel Johansson, and Jared Black is not here tonight either. We'll start off with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. The warrants, minutes, and financial reports. Is there any discussion on those?
There was a correction on the minutes. I already called Jared. I think it's fixed.
It's on page 2, bottom. When you start cutting and pasting, had Nanette's name still on there instead of Julie's. So.
Oh,
gosh. Well, I didn't see it. Nothing.
That has been corrected on the minutes. So.
All right, with that correction.
I move that we accept them.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Unanimous. Personnel actions.
Have two names to present to the board for approval. Donna Kramer to serve as a special education aide or assistant here at Castle Elementary, 29.5 hours a week. And also present the name of Casey Flucky as interim principal at Green River High School for this school year. That position will be opened at the end of the year. But she will serve as interim. She'll still be doing half-day special ed, and it's our intent to hire some aid time down there to help with special ed while she does that. So we'll be advertising for that. But I'd like to recommend those two names for approval.
Make a motion that we accept those names for
second.
I think that Casey is an excellent choice.
Good choice.
She'll be fantastic. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, there you pass. Letter of resignation.
That's the one I sent to you from Mr. Johnson. Probably should have done that before I approved Casey's name. But I did give you a copy of his letter of resignation that you can read. We don't need to read it here, but he does express his gratitude for the 30 years that he spent in our school district. And we certainly, as a district, want to thank him for his service and commend him for his focus that he's been able to keep there on students and student achievement. And one time was doing both elementary and high school, but the last few years has been focused at the high school. So I'd like to recommend that you accept his letter of resignation as of Friday, 6th of November.
I'll make a motion that we accept his letter of resignation.
Second.
It's actually a retirement, but he's resigning from the school district.
Do we need to have a vote on that?
We generally do on letters of resignation, okay. But it's really he's retiring, so.
Yeah, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Who signed it?
Both.
Thank you, Craig.
That's what I thought.
Pick one, huh?
Okay, the consolidated application.
This is the heavy reading that you get every year at this time. This particular item is the what's called the Utah Consolidated Application or Plan, and this is our school district's version of that. This is the plans that we have to write and the budgets that we have to do in order to get about it's about $1.2 million in both state and federal funding. It requires us to review student assessment data, to look at the greatest academic needs that we have, also things like at-risk school climate, safety issues, school safety, so forth. And then there are about 5 or 6 plans that have to be written, and then that's submitted to the USOE, and once they approve it, then that funding is available for us to use each year. And I know that it's a lot of reading, and it's a lot of hours of work for many in the district. I would recommend that the board approve that consolidated application for 2015-16.
I'll make the motion that we approve the consolidated plan.
I'll second that.
It's obvious it took a lot of work.
Yeah, there's how many people actually involved in putting this together then?
Well, there's people in the schools who are involved in supplying us with data. We have to have a lot of information from counselors. Of course, we at the district office go through all of the assessment data. We go through state reports on at-risk, all of those kind of things. But most of the actual writing of the application is done by those in the district office.
Okay.
But we do rely on the principals and counselors particularly to provide us with information and data. Accelerated students, concurrent enrollment data, you know, statistics of all kinds, but
okay.
Probably total, I want to say man hours, but that's kind of sexist. People hours.
Who am I giving this to?
Kurt.
It's probably a couple hundred hours work, so.
There were a couple of typos.
Okay.
I just.
Okay, yeah, he said.
I already said before you got here that.
Yeah.
I think he corrected him.
Oh, did he?
I told Sam he should have been the one doing it because he was my English teacher.
Oh. Well, I just had a highlighter in my hand when I read it.
Thank you.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second. All in favor?
Oh.
I seconded it.
Oh, aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
No one's opposed. Okay. The educator effectiveness system, is that what we're looking at, or the evaluation?
Yeah, it
plan?
Is, and that's, you recall a couple of meetings ago you approved the policy on the educator effectiveness, educator evaluation system. We have done, over the last 2 years, a lot of work with principals and teachers on trying to, first of all, understand this whole process. This came out of Senate Bill 64. Probably 3 years ago initially, it was supposed to be implemented in 2014-15. It might have been 4 years ago. That's been pushed back now to this current school year. The actual evaluation is being implemented now, even though the state office has not yet given final approval to its own rule on it. And we still have some things that are not settled that we haven't received in the state office, but the law requires implementation this year. What you have here is the details that go with the policy. So the policy is a general explanation of the evaluation plan, which was approved 2 years ago and submitted to the state, which they approved. And then this is the detail behind it, which outlines the schedule and the kinds of things that are used in that evaluation, how it'll be done, how it does not yet contain the calculation of ratings because we haven't finalized that yet, but it does include everything else, and we need to submit this now to the state. The first round of evaluations is supposed to be completed by the 15th of November, so that's for those who are in their first 3 years of teaching. So I want to recommend to the board that you approve the educator effectiveness system, recognizing that we'll still need to make tweaks to it and modifications to it as we go along this year and see where the bugs are for us.
Well, I was impressed, and I think that it really will be helpful long term. I move that we approve it.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Let me just make a comment about it. This is really complex, and it has placed probably doubled or tripled the load on our principals with regard to evaluation. And it's probably been one big stressor in the lives of all of our teachers right now. And so I hope that we'll all be supportive and sensitive to everyone as we implement this. There are some things in the law that tie it to pay. And I don't at this point feel comfortable in withholding pay until we get What we have is we have a new core curriculum in the state, which is about 3 years old is all. We're learning it. We have new teaching standards, new leadership standards. We have a new educator evaluation system, and none of them been aligned yet. And to tie pay to that right now, to me, is unconscionable. And so we're looking at holding that off for one more year before we start withholding pay based on this evaluation system. So I'm just letting you know that. That's kind of where we're looking.
The legislature doesn't specify when the pay leg is implemented.
It does specify that they would like that to happen next school year. Next year's pay schedule.
Okay.
And it doesn't affect the pay they're already getting. It's only intended to affect the increases. Any increases.
That's
we might end up in an economic. We may have to cut pay. I don't know how they'll handle that. If you end up cutting pay. It doesn't say you won't cut it if we don't have enough money to keep it the same. So.
Well, one of the things that I liked is the specificity of the evaluation document, because I think it will help the teachers know specifically what they're being evaluated on.
Yeah.
And help them set goals for improvement.
And see, they're just now learning those standards because they're brand new. And we're not getting a lot of professional development out of the state office on this. We have had some, but not a lot. So it's tough. Tough for teachers and principals. So we're all trying to work together to make it work and work with our teachers association to try to implement this and have it done in a way that we can make it effective and yet be a little bit understanding of the fact that we're not all yet, all of the components that need to come together are not aligned yet in any school district in the state.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Thank you.
Hopefully we can work through that. All right, the substitute pay schedule.
We've talked about this in other board meetings, but we've received feedback and we've looked at it and we are a little bit concerned about our substitute teacher pay rates. Our classified employee pay schedules, substitute schedules are tied to the annual increases that are given, but the teacher substitute rate is not. And we talked about raising that rate. The proposal, what you have here is the current one, and then you have the proposed. It raises the daily rate by $10 a day, but it also reduces the number of days the number of consecutive days you would need to teach in order for it to be increased again. So it would, for example, if you were a licensed teacher and you taught from 1 to 20 days, you'd be paid at a rate of $65 a day. On day 21, that would raise, currently, that would be raised to $85. On the new one, a licensed substitute would be paid $75 a day. And on day 11, which would be after 2 weeks, it would raise to
$95. Okay.
We also added a component. If we have a substitute who substitutes 30 or more days in a single school year, even though it's not consecutive or for the same teacher, that they would be at a higher rate, that $95. And then we've lowered from 60 days down to 30 days the number of consecutive days that a substitute would need to substitute before it goes to a beginning teaching salary. We're having a very difficult time finding substitutes who are licensed, who are willing to teach long-term for the kind of pay that we have. We just hardly can find people willing to give up all of their other things that they do in order to sub. And when we have teachers who are out on medical leave, or we've had several who have had cancer, we have had several who have had babies. It's very difficult to find a qualified teacher to teach for the rates that we've paid. So we're recommending that we increase that pay as it shows you on the proposed substitute rates.
So
just the teacher scale.
A question, would it start today and forward, or go back to the...
That's a good question, thanks, Julie, because Jared and I had that discussion today, and what we don't want to make it retroactive, because anytime you do a pay increase, it typically starts the day that you pass it. Mm-hmm. However, if we have we have several, for example, substitutes right now that have been teaching for someone, we will look at where they're at tomorrow and adjust their pay accordingly. If they haven't done the 2 weeks,
but you'll count their back.
When they get 2 weeks, we'll move it up. But if they've already done 2 weeks, we'll move them up immediately.
Okay.
But we won't go retroactive back and pay
for
past days.
I think that's fair.
I do too.
That's our recommendation.
All right.
It'd be really hard to track any other way, so.
I think that sounds fair.
Yep.
I move that we approve this new substitute rate.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay, Mr. Ant.
Thank you for coming, and I welcome you all here to Cathedral Elementary School. We welcome you here and appreciate having the opportunity to let you know what's going on in our school. I'm grateful to have come to a good school that has a wonderful faculty and staff who've welcomed me with open arms, and they work hard every day for our students. It's been exciting to get to know all of my new staff and all of my new students. They're all pretty amazing, I think. in addition to myself, who is new here this year, we had two more additions to our staff, and that was Kaylin Fail, who is our computer technology aide, and Donna Kramer, who you just approved to be our resource aide. And we're very excited and grateful for the enthusiasm that these new additions bring to our already wonderful staff. I don't know how many of you know the story of the starfish, but you'll notice that a lot of us here at Castledale Elementary have starfish on. And that's because the story is told of a young child who was walking along by the ocean, and an observer watched him bending down and picking up starfish and throwing them back into the ocean, and he asked the child why he was doing that, and he said, well, they'll die if I leave them here, and so when I place them back in the ocean, they'll live. And the man was a little skeptical and said, well, look at all of these starfish, you can't save all of them. And the child said, no, but I made a difference for that one. And so we wear these starfish to remind us of the power that we have in our students' lives, and that we can make a difference every day, one starfish, one student at a time, and that helps us remind us where our focus is and should be. We've had some great things that have been going on so far this year at Castledale Elementary. We're doing something new with our students, recognizing them for the great things that they're doing, both in their academic work and in their behavior. They're called positive office referrals. So a teacher or staff member can fill out a referral and send it with the student to the office. And I get to read about all the awesome things that they're doing. And they get to choose something out of a prize box. And then I get to add something as well. And then we send those home to parents and let them know all the wonderful things that their students are doing. Sometimes parents get a little afraid when they see things coming from the school. And we like being able to send positive things home from us as well. And the kids have been really excited and enthusiastic about that. And I've got to read a lot of wonderful and cute things that they've been doing. And we just have an awesome student body. As a school, we're also looking at ways to incorporate more technology in educationally relevant and useful ways. And we're looking at new software and hardware to help us with that task. We recently purchased a set of Chromebooks that we'll be using, especially in our upper grades. And as soon as we have some training on that, we'll be rolling those out to our students. And we're also hoping in the future to add an iPad lab as well, because there are different applications on each of those, and we feel like we will have a well-rounded technology component is, in addition to the smart boards and other things that our teachers are using to instruct our students. We're also studying ways to gather and use the data that we have from our students in ways to make sure that our instruction is relevant and is helping students to gain the most knowledge that they can and to be successful learners. Few other things, we had a visit from our local fire department during our fire safety week to help students learn about being safe during fire, and they brought the fire trucks on to the school grounds, and the kids were able to explore and climb on those and pull the horns, and we had a few calls wondering what was going on. That was our future firefighters working. We also participated in the National Walk to School Day. Again, this year, this is a tradition at Castle Dale Elementary, and has been a good thing for parents and students and teachers. We had several who went down to the park and walked up with them, and then we had a few who stayed here and made sure that they were able to get their free breakfast that we were able to provide for them with the help of our wonderful lunch staff. We also had some fun and educational activities as part of our Red Ribbon Week celebrations that we just finished up. Some of those include Better Things to Do Than Drugs workshops, arranged by our awesome parent teacher organization. They learned about farm animals from local farmers. They had a workshop by the Civil Air Patrol. We had tips on saying no to alcohol and drugs by Jonathan Faber from Four Corners Mental Health. Some health and safety information from our local sheriff's department and ambulance crew. And this was the one that the kids really liked. We got a visit from the Guardian Life, the Life Flight crew. They flew their helicopter down and landed it in our schoolyard, and the kids were able to watch them land, and then they did some safety information, and then when they were through, the kids were able to watch them take off. They were pretty stoked to be able to see that, so it was pretty exciting. Yesterday, we were able to host a training for all the district's elementary teachers on our new math program that the district adopted this year, Go Math, and we were able to learn a lot more about how to use the program and how to help our students use it effectively so they can learn the new concepts they need to know that the core asks of them. We also had a checkers tournament that started this week, and it'll go for the next few weeks during recess. They get to play checkers and have a tournament, and then we have some prizes for the total winners. In addition to that, we'll be having a chess tournament and a speed stacking tournament later on this year. We'll also be participating in the Geography Bee and the Spelling Bee. One cool thing we are doing this year as part of the speed stacking is the National Speed Stacking Organization has asked, they're trying to set a world record for the most kids stacking, but they want kids stacking for a cause. And so they asked schools that were participating to choose a cause to stack for, and we've chosen to ask students to bring a donation for our local food bank. And so we'll be taking that. We'll be stacking those as well, and then when we're through with our day, we'll be taking those down to the food bank. We asked if they would appreciate that, and they said they were pretty low, so they were excited to receive that. And that will be happening next Thursday. Next Wednesday, our school has been asked to participate in the Castle Dale City Veterans Day program, and so our students will be going down and singing four songs as part of that, and we're honored to be asked to be a part of that. And so we've been practicing some cool patriotic songs, and brings a tear to my eye and makes my heart beat every time I hear them practicing, because they sing in full voice and they're awesome. So I encourage you, if you're over here in Castle Dale on November 11th at 11 o'clock, that you.
So will that be your whole school?
It will be all of our students, except for our kindergarten, because they'll be heading home, but all of our students will be down there. They'll walk down from the school to the park and participate there. Then we'll have a sloppy Joe lunch in the park, in the pavilion, and then they'll walk back up. And so we're pretty excited about that. We have had a great start to our year, and we look forward to all of the many amazing things that our teachers and students will accomplish through the remainder of the year. So.
Thank you, Melinda.
Fantastic.
Sounds like you're off and running. That's great.
Like the enthusiasm.
All right. Are you going to consolidate both reports then, Superintendent?
Well, Jared didn't leave me any reports.
something else.
I better hurry and look at his paperwork.
Yeah, he had a few things on it, oh.
Yeah, the USBA convention was the one. He had a paper for each of you to fill out indicating your intent, and I think that Mr. Worthing was going to collect those for him. The audit report was going to be tonight, but they had apparently double booked. And so our audit report will be on the next meeting, December 2nd.
Okay.
Our next board meeting. And then if any of you have any interest in the National School Boards Association conference, let Jared know.
It's in Hawaii, right?
No, it's not Hawaii. No, it's in Boston.
Smart out.
Yeah.
And I just had one thing. It has to do with the study that we're trying to do on sixth grade, ninth grade. I sent you a copy of a short survey. We wanted a survey of parents that would take no more than about 10 minutes to fill out. We really wanted to collect information on what grade levels the parents had students in the school district, and also separate the issue of ninth grade, sixth grade, and ask about each one separately, and find out how many of our parents would like to see ninth grade move to Emory High School. We're speaking on this end of the county and not Green River, of course. And to give the reasons why they think that that would be advantageous to do that. What would be what do you see the advantages of such a move? And then if you said no, that you didn't want to see that happen, what would you consider to be the disadvantages of making that move? And then would you favor moving the sixth grade students into a sixth, seventh, eighth middle school? If yes, list the advantages, no, the disadvantages. And
then... Do you really want them to write in that little tiny box?
No, the box will allow... It's a text box. The survey will be done online. The text box will expand to as big as you want it.
Because I thought I was a parent...
No, we're not handing this out. This is just for you to see the questions.
Okay.
This will be online. The text box will expand and take as much information. Yeah, that's like, tell us all of your complaints and put it in this little itty bitty box.
Yeah.
No.
That's not good for me.
Then we have, do you have any additional input you want to be considered in relation to those decisions? The thing that I wanted to know is whether you, is there additional information you really want to collect? The only thing that I can see lacking here would be a proposal to perhaps keep the sixth grade where they're at and have a, if you move ninth, have a seventh, eighth middle school. And that, there's no question on that, but from the answers that we currently have here, we can probably derive an opinion on that. But you're either, if you... See, we don't have overcrowding. Mm-hmm. We actually have declining enrollments. Mm-hmm. This year we were down 60 students. We've lost a third of our student population in the last 15 years. And right now the coal industry and others are not looking really good. So if you move the ninth grade to the high school, you're either going to have small middle schools with seventh and eighth. If you move the sixth to the middle school, you're going to have small elementary schools of about the same size. So it's a matter of, in the future, if the enrollment continues to decline, the concern is that we may end up closing some elementary schools. So there is that option of looking at a smaller middle school with seventh, eighth, but we need to get more information on it. We want to have this survey out within the next week. And we will send parent link messages out. It will be online. We will invite parents that don't have access online to go to the school, and someone at the school will give them access to their computers there, their network there, where they fill out the survey there.
Right.
That was my concern, was disadvantage, you don't have access to a computer, you want to definitely get their input as well.
But they could, it will be on our website, right on the very front screen.
Okay.
And you can go to the library, or you can go to the school, and they will sit you at a computer and let you take the survey there.
Superintendent? Would you consider letting the papers post that, even though they couldn't answer on it?
Well, we would put, yeah, we plan to put something in the newspaper indicating that, that it's available and how to fill it, where they can fill it out.
Okay.
Yes, thanks, Julie.
So each parent, if it's a two-parent family, does each parent, can each parent do it?
What we're hoping to have is one survey from each family, because it's, beyond that, what you're going to get is duplication, you're going to get multiple surveys from one source. So we would, you know, look at it in that way.
We need to make that request then, there's no way of verifying.
Yes, we would.
We should request.
We will have a statement that will be read on Parent Link and also in the newspaper that would indicate that we're, that we are looking for one survey per family. And this is how to do it, where to go, it'll have the web address. And then if someone just doesn't know how to do that, they can go to the school and anyone, secretary, principal, a teacher, library media person, computer lab aide can put you on a computer and you can fill it out.
So how long will they have, how long?
Well, I think probably about 3 weeks, probably till the first part of December sometime. And then we'd collect that data and compile it and generate a report for the board.
I think it's good.
That's our next step, and I was just wanted to make sure there, if any board members had additional information that we might be missing. We don't want to make it too complex, but we want to know what the interest is, and we also want to know what parents, how parents view as advantages or disadvantages.
I think this is a good starting point. From that, we may want to actually
do additional,
yes,
collect additional information, and that's possible. I appreciate John back here, who's been working with what's called SurveyMonkey to put this online. It isn't accessed online yet, but it is online, so we can see it online, and have done a few demos ourselves to see how it's working, and then we'll get that as quickly as we can and start collecting that information. We're also, we have, right now, I know Emory High School has already run some mock scheduling, and they're ready to go to look at that. Our two junior highs are not quite ready yet, at least the last I checked, but they're trying to run some mock scheduling to see what kind of licensing and endorsement issues we're going to have, and what, how many sections of classes that we'll need. One thing that we're going to have to look at is classroom space, particularly at Emory High, and what would have to be done there to accommodate another 150 students. We anticipate Emory High would probably be near 600 students by making that move. Our two, if we went with 6th, 7th, and 8th in the middle schools, we'd probably be in the 200s. Elementaries would be near 200 or some of them below. If we went with a 7th, 8th middle school, we would be right around, at least unless our enrollments start really dropping again. Right now, we would probably be at about 150 at Canyon View and about 170 at San Rafael. And our elementaries would be anywhere from 250 down to about 130.
How many are at the San Rafael right now?
San Rafael is what, 240? The thing with moving sixth grade is that your dividing point for endorsements is between sixth and seventh grade. You can teach seventh and eighth with an elementary license if you have a K-8 license or a 1-8 license. But if you're, But if you teach beyond sixth grade, is it with an elementary license, you cannot teach seventh. You can only teach sixth. You can't teach seventh and eighth without going back to school, taking additional coursework and getting an endorsement. So if you move a sixth grade into a middle school, you're looking at probably self-containing them to a part of your building where the same teachers would be teaching and they could rotate, but it would be elementary licensed teachers, with the exception of maybe a PE class or a music, but even there you'd have, those teachers would have to get endorsements. You can't teach seventh and eighth on an elementary license without a special endorsement in the content area. So that's more information I plan to give you because we still haven't done a survey.
Yet, so.
Kirk, my one other question is, I believe that the primary stakeholders are definitely the parents of the children who are in the schools, but I think somehow we need to get input from other people within the communities as well, because it's their taxes, it's their tax money that we're spending. So if we could figure out a way to offer them the opportunity to provide their input, but disaggregate it from those that have children in school, I think it might be helpful.
We can certainly have that discussion. The operating costs of the schools, I don't know how it would really impact it. I don't know there would be a huge impact.
But just something to think about, because it's everybody's.
It wouldn't change a lot. The schools that qualify for necessarily existent small schools, because most of our schools currently do, or at least half of them, a little over half, 60%, probably 6 out of 10. And I'm just stabbing at that because it's either somewhere around between 5 to 8 of our 10 schools qualify for NESS. Mm-hmm. But
well, you could just put a.
But I wonder if that input ought to be given as well, that opportunity for input.
Do you think the question should be the same, or should we have a different survey? I don't know.
I think the same question.
I would ask the same things.
Yeah.
Just got
Well, if they don't check the box that they have kids in the school.
Right. Right. Then hypothetically,
the roads were not so good.
Mm-hmm. But without information on knowing what it's going to cost, you know, that could change people's minds if they knew there was a cost factor.
I'm sure there could be some operating cost differences. I don't anticipate that because our buildings are going to run regardless.
If you got one or 100.
I think that what you would see would be, you may see some additional costs in staffing. Obviously, Emory High is going to need additional staff, but the middle schools would need fewer staff. But it's whether they have the endorsements in the right areas. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to have to let some teachers go in order to hire others who have the right endorsements.
Mm-hmm. No.
Well,
that's a tough one.
And I don't want to muddy the waters, but by the same token, the people that we represent are not just the parents. No. It's everyone in our precinct. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like we need to have the opportunity for input from all of those people.
So maybe there needs to be another box that says I have no children in school. Can you check that one?
Well, you could put a box right there that says that don't have children in school. But
I still have
when the computer tabulates the results, I'm not sure it's going to separate the two out. We can do it by hand. I don't know if we could do that either. I would have to see.
Well, then why did they
check
at grade level?
It would tabulate how many kids in each grade level's parents responded, you know, what the grade levels are that are being represented in the responses. But
you would think that if it could do that, it could also.
But we could add that on there.
The other box that said
and
no children.
Computer. Then it would be a community survey, or you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I brought it here tonight, for you to give that input on how you want to see this come out.
I think that would.
This is your survey. This request has come to you to consider. So.
Well, I also think of those young families. Who don't have kids in school
yet.
They may have preschool kids or babies.
They're coming.
Yeah.
And this will affect their kids too.
Yeah. I think it would be good to have another box that says you don't have any kids in school right now, but also that, to be able to count those people. I think everyone that has an opinion should be able to.
Be heard.
Be heard, yeah.
Okay, that's good feedback, thanks.
All right.
Because you wouldn't be able to fill out a survey, Roy, would you?
No, I wouldn't be able to. No, nobody here would they? And even if you have grandkids, you probably have an opinion too, right?
Yeah, you might.
I don't have grandkids.
Anyway, that's what I had to report.
Okay, is that everything from you, Superintendent?
Yes.
Our president is here, so go ahead.
I'm sorry, I just got in from California, so, any public comments?
We did have, you have one.
Oh, sorry.
Paper.
Yes.
Rachel.
Somewhere.
Oh, there you are.
Somewhere, I've got a paper here for you.
Rachel Lund is here from Upward Bound Program and would like to address the board.
Welcome. So I'm from the Upward Bound Program that's housed at USU Eastern, in Price, and it's a, I don't know how much you know about Upward Bound.
My kids did it.
Oh.
Two of them.
It's a great program. So it's a federally funded program that is designed to help low-income, first-generation, and diverse students get into college and, succeed at college. We have to track the students through high school and then actually also 6 years beyond high school to see where they go and how they succeed. And I'm new to this job. I actually came here in May. It was Justin Orth, who many of you may know, built a great program. But in the past, we haven't worked a lot with CanyonView. And I couldn't figure out why, because we actually have a lot of, we can bring students into Upward Bound when they're 9th and 10th grade, and then after that, we can no longer admit them to the program. And we've had some students who did so poorly their 9th grade year that by the time they graduate, it's really hard to help them with the scholarships and things like that. So I wanted to make it a focus to really try and get 9th grade students into the program. So we started, did some recruiting at CanyonView, and we had a great response. A lot of kids who were very interested. The conflict is that we have a very small office and very few people who can actually go, and I'm also the director of student support services on campus, so I'm actually a 50-50 director. Anyway.
What kind of numbers are you talking?
Six to nine.
Okay.
Six to nine kids from CanyonView. We serve 60 students total, but that's from Grand, Emory, and Carbon counties. Mm-hmm. So from CanyonView, we have on a regular basis about 6 to 9 kids.
Do you have any at San Rafael 9th graders that are participating?
We do not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for asking.
Well, Mr. Meekin, the principal there, said that he had not been contacted, didn't know much about it.
We're trying to spread it out, and I'm trying to hire more tutors so we can get out.
And
that
I know you're
way,
early
but
in your presentation, but
to.
I have one more question.
Sure,
Who's your main contact at the schools? Is it the counselors? Because our principals are having a real struggle because they don't feel like it's coming through them.
Yeah, we've been
there's no
through the counselors.
With
yeah,
so.
Part of our grant dictates that the students who get admitted have a recommendation from the counselors. So we work with the counselors to recommend the kids who get in, and the application process goes through the counselors. So we hope that the counselors and the principals work together.
I didn't mean to interrupt you so soon.
No, you're fine. And I did send out to the principals and to the counselors an introduction of me and the program to try and get them on the same page, as well as a calendar for the rest of the year, like trips we would be taking and things like that. So just as an additional trying to get everybody on the same page. Anyway, so we've got 6 to 9 kids from CanyonView who are wanting to come to our after-school tutoring. And they have been coming, some of them, just on their own and leaving early, which is a conflict because they're leaving from a class. And we've told them it's fine. You don't have to leave early. Whether or not they leave early is fine. We'll stay there to tutor them at our Emory High School as long as we need to. But the conflict is that these are low-income students, first-generation students, whose parents often don't understand the importance of education and preparing for college, also whose parents work and many of them can't get over there. So we've had comments from the kids and from other people, why can't we ride the activity bus? So I said, I don't know. I will find out. So talking to the principal and to the counselor, Ryan, they said it's because the activity bus is set aside specifically for sports, and that's how the board set it, and so that it wasn't open to these students. So I'm coming here to ask. I know it's a stopgap. You're looking at moving the ninth grade. It's, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But I'd love to be able to allow those students to be able to ride that activity bus to come. We do after-school tutoring, workshops, test preparation, things on test anxiety, career exploration, all of that kind of stuff. So we'd love for them to be able to have that resource, if at all possible.
So parents are taking them now at this point?
Yeah, and some of them are, yes, I'm sorry. That was
the problem we've had is that some of the parents are picking the kids up early enough that they're missing not only their advisory class. Now, this is on Monday and every other Wednesday,
Monday
right?
Monday and every, yeah. So on a,
and
in
so
a month,
on those days,
six
they're missing part of their seventh period, not just part of the advisory.
But they don't need
so.
To, and I'm not sure. I know for sure we confronted the kids about it, and because the principal called and said, why are they missing so much? I said, they shouldn't need to be. There's no reason that they would need to be. We were saying, you know, when the activity bus leaves, then you could leave, get there on time. Or we've also told them you can just come after school if you can get there. We've offered to transport them ourselves, but the principal, or it was Ryan, who said, well, we can't check them out to you. And if we pick them up ourselves in order to get to Emory on time, we'd have to, they'd have to also miss. It'd be about the same time that the activity bus was leaving. So we could pick them up ourselves, they could ride the activity bus, they could come afterward, but that would, about half the kids who would qualify don't have a way to get over.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
Kind of, those are the conflicts, I guess.
I don't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine.
My kids were tutors.
Oh,
I
sure.
Had a daughter and a son, and one went to the middle school over in Price, and the other one went to help her junior high.
Yeah.
But they went to the school.
Right.
So how
Which
come
would be
these
ideal.
Canyon View kids are coming to Emory High for this?
Because we don't have enough tutors. Right now, in my staff, I have me, and I'm the director of two programs. I have my full-time program.
So are your tutors at Emory High?
My program coordinator is at Emory High, and she is doing the majority of the tutoring. So I have me and Desiree is her name. She does the tutoring right now, all of it.
But it's
and
after
then somebody
school,
at Grand
so
County.
Why can't she go to Canyon View?
Because
she's
at
Emory.
Yeah, how many Emory High students are there involved in it?
There's about 30.
No.
No,
there
15,
aren't that many. There's under
right
20. Usually average is about 10.
Is now I know Emory High has after school tutoring also. How are these conflicting? Are they competing
no,
with each
separate.
Other?
Upward Bound meets in the cafeteria.
Right.
Our program's in the library.
Is, are they similar programs?
The Upward Bound
are
is more is a goes. What else do you do besides the tutoring? What kinds of activities?
So
Rachel?
Once a month we take the students to colleges around the state. Last month, we took them up to the University of Utah. We took them to the Department of Human Genetics, which was pretty cool. Taught them about study abroad, about student life, about getting involved. And then we were also, a part of our grant dictates that we give them cultural experiences that they would not otherwise have. So we took them to Thriller at the Odyssey Dance Theater, the dance program, which was really pretty cool. And then on the way back, we visited Westminster since we were in the area. So it was an overnight thing. In a couple of weeks, we're going down and visiting Cedar City and looking at their engineering program and their theater program, and then watching a play that night, and then visiting Dixie and their medical facilities as well. And we base that on what the students are interested in studying, what they think they're interested in studying, so we try and get them some hands-on experiences at the college so that they can have those. So that happens once a month, and then after school is the tutoring and the workshops. We also do evening workshops for the parents because, like I said, with the first-generation parents, a lot of them don't know the process, and the process
mm-hmm.
scares them, and so we do
yeah.
a lot of that kind of the process of applying and getting in and, and helping them as well, so.
My question is if they're doing tutoring at Emory High, after school tutoring, and you're low in numbers for your tutoring, if that can be a possibility that we use the tutors that are in Emory High, no?
No, it's.
And you do the Canyon View, no?
No, and we have to have, in order, because it's a federally funded grant, they have a lot of rules that we have to follow,
yeah,
and a lot
sure.
of tracking.
Oops.
So in order for our students, we have to have 700 face-to-face hours with one of our staff and the students per year. So it's a lot, and they're through our staff. That would include if I can hire part-time tutors, which I've had posted for some time, but I'm just not finding people who are looking for that.
So you have the funding, but you just can't.
I have the funding to hire tutors, yeah.
Oh, that sounds like that would make the most sense.
But I can't get any. So if I could hire them to, because we're Lighthouse is having to come to Carbon High School. We have one tutor and me doing it as part-time as can, and we're trying to get all of them.
What are the qualifications for a tutor?
They have to have a high school diploma. They have to be in college and have at least a 3.0. So they're not that hard. They have to at least have some college, and their college GPA has to be at least a 3.0.
I was just curious as to whether we had any students at USU Eastern who live in Emory County who could be helped tutor at the junior highs. Or
yes.
You'd think. I'm also trying to hire tutors for student support services, which could be peer tutors, and I'm just having a real struggle getting people to
apply. Well, it's obviously a program that's worthwhile, and we want, do I dare speak for the board?
Go ahead. Yeah, I think
we definitely want to help facilitate.
Yeah.
As far as being able to make specific decisions tonight, I don't think there's any way we can. I think we need to think and explore any possibilities.
Yeah.
I'd like input. What's your feeling?
Well, I'm concerned about a couple of things. One is if you're bringing over 6 to 9 ninth graders to the high school, working with 10 to 20 high school students, that's a lot of kids for one.
Mm. That's too many for one person. That's
and,
what I thought.
And I wonder also
it's
about
less
the
than what we have at Carbon.
You're kidding.
No.
Oh my gosh.
That's I mean I understand
well,
that. I can see that concern, I'm sure.
Plus the productivity of the tutoring when you're dealing with that many students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the primary need for students in the high school, and I assume it would be for junior high as well, is math. And a high school diploma in math may not be enough to help these kids.
No, but they
in
do have to have taken it in college with a 3.0. So they don't have to have an associate's degree, but they do have to have taken at least 1050 in college with a, that's where the 3.0 comes in.
Okay, but you're finding it difficult to fill that position with
very
those qualifications.
Yeah.
And that's my point.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
very
mm-hmm.
hard to find somebody qualified to tutor in math. We've had an opening for 2 months now, an adult math tutor, and it's very, very difficult. Our tutoring program right now is functioning with peer tutors. We have advanced math students, calculus students, pre-calculus students, math 1050 students who are helping our students in secondary 2 and secondary 3, and that's working quite well. But that's students, so.
And I think we need to look into, because I know the junior high has some tutoring help for them after
that's
school
fine.
As well. So I think we need to see, you know, where those
picture.
Students would be best served in before we decide about, do you know what I mean?
No.
If you have two people tutoring, like Principal Davis talks about, and that large group of students, it might be, you know, more effective if they were in smaller groups with peer
well, the
tutors.
Question is not, I mean, that, I'm not trying to sound obstinate, but you really have no control over that. The grant dictates the format in which we do it, that I can't help that.
But you can,
help that.
But you could employ more tutors, and when that happens,
I can certainly
then we
try.
Might can consider. That's
but
what
the,
my point.
The thing is, the kids are trying to come over anyway, and if they can't be involved in the program, we can't put them into the
mm-hmm.
program.
Yeah.
So if they're not being able to come. come to the high school for the tutoring that we can provide at this time, then they can't be put into the program, which means they can't come to the cultural events, it means they can't come to the workshops,
mm-hmm.
it means we can't get their parents, we can't start tracking them. So it's not a question of whether or not they come, and it's honestly not a question of whether or not it's the most effective way to tutor them, it's a question of whether or not we can get them in the program to get them the help in the long run. So, and if all else fails, we can wait till they get to 10th grade and put them in the program at 10th grade, but like I said, one of the reasons
yes.
I wanted to focus on 9th grade is because we're finding a lot of students that by 10th grade, it's already too late. Because to stay in our program, they have to be getting at least a 2.7. That's something that the feds dictate. For them to come on the cultural events, they have to have at least B's and above.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, something that is dictated by the federal government, so they have to check their grades. I mean, like, all that kind of stuff. I believe deep in my soul that if I could get more tutors, it would be more effective. And if we could just do
mm-hmm.
it at Canyon View with the tutor, it would be more effective. But
well,
we need to get them in the program so we can help them.
And how long has this been going on? Have you been able to see the results of
how
classes long? Going through? You know, if your students being helped, I'm just asked. I just
wonder.
Well,
this is so for Trio. They just had their 50th
mm-hmm.
anniversary
mm-hmm.
for Trio programs, which include Upward Bound, and there
mm-hmm.
are multitudes of success stories.
Mm-hmm.
Justin, who was the last director, had actually come through the Upward Bound program, so
mm-hmm.
As well as both of my employees are Upward Bound graduates. So
It is helpful.
There's a lot of data on
yeah, that's good.
Helps,
my son tutored two girls at Helper Elementary or Helper Junior
mm-hmm.
High.
Yeah.
And he ran into one of them a couple years later, and she comes up and says, "Is your name Mitchell?" And he says, "Yes, is your name whatever it was?" And she said, "Thank you so much.
Mm.
You changed everything."
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's already been so rewarding for
and
me.
And my daughter
just
did.
Just been here since May,
helped so. Four boys. And they came to our college graduation, and
oh, wow.
they were great. They mm-hmm. loved her.
Are your kids
yeah.
still around? Do they want to tutor?
No.
It is for sure something I'm working on, and I do understand the concerns of effectiveness.
Yeah.
So,
but
be
because
so.
Of the grant applications.
I do remember they didn't get paid very much money.
Yeah.
So how many tutors could you employ? I mean,
depends on how much I pay them. So I have a certain amount of money.
So you have some flexibility.
Right, in my grant. Like,
okay.
if I can, and I've thought very seriously about upping the pay to see if I could get fewer,
mm-hmm.
Because I haven't
well,
had
I'm
that
thinking,
that cost right now.
Could adults do it?
Yeah,
some
absolutely.
Stay-at-home mom
who knows their math. Yeah,
yeah.
That would be. Because
yeah.
he's right, math is our biggest thing. And my program coordinator, who's currently tutoring, had a minor in math, so she does a great job. But like I said, he knows it's hard to find, so I am
oh.
trying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't, I certainly don't think that we would argue that we want all of the help for kids that we can get them. There's no question that
oh,
we
John.
Want
okay.
kids
okay.
to be,
you.
Yes,
you know, just bombarded with remediation, tutoring, whatever we can get them, experiences. Experiences outside
mm-hmm.
of Emory County, experiences in all these different things. I think the issue that has brought us here is the ninth graders having to leave
early.
To,
yeah, that's
or are leaving early to get there, and I don't.
Well,
we got to find a way to resolve that so that we don't have.
Somehow.
If I can. I think that we have more control about them skipping out of class really early if we put them on the activity bus. Because I had no idea they were also missing seventh period. They were not showing up there that early to Emory. So
oh, so they're not going straight to the high school.
They
then.
Must not have been. Because when the principal called
oh.
and said they were missing seventh period,
that's
I was like, okay, that's a
problem
okay.
in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So that so I think that actually if we let them ride the activity bus, that would solve part of that problem. The other part of that problem is that if they did ride the activity bus, they would be leaving early from that. But I'm just having a hard time in my mind, why is it okay for the soccer team or the football team to leave early to go to practice, but not okay for these kids to do it to get
yeah.
help.
Mm-hmm. I think, like Marie says, I think we need to talk to the principals
yeah.
and kind of see what
see
can be arranged rather than is that
out.
We
how
could
long
look at it.
Do they stay Is the tutoring session, how long is it?
As long as they need, we're typically done by about 5, but if they need more time.
What time does it start?
Just right after school, so 3.
Like 3?
Mm-hmm.
So almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
John, did you have something?
As a side note, to the extent possible, could you compare and contrast Gear Up to your program?
Yeah, no, I really wish I could.
Because you said they're coming out of the
Gear Up does not, it doesn't come through the same federal funding.
Right.
And I know that they are the Gear Up that is housed at USU Eastern actually has to report to UVU.
UVU, yeah.
It serves a similar population. The way that they are entered into the program is different.
Right.
So they start like a cohort and they can enter 9th and then 10th and then 11th. But I'm not, the goals are, from what I can tell, the same. But we don't, we're not, since we're funded federally different.
Okay.
I'm not sure why there's so much overlap. I wish I could help you with that.
As long as they're both going up, we're okay. Gear Up, upward bound.
Right, that's all out the direction.
We need to look at it.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that to our attention. Can you, we need to make sure that they're not leaving early though. That's, for right now, that's really important. Because that puts them at a disadvantage as well, if they're not getting all their, so. We'll look at that, talk to the principal and see what.
We've addressed it and we'll continue to address it.
Okay, all right, thank you. And thank you for your information.
Thanks for coming.
We appreciate it.
Rachel Lund.
And we'll try to find tutors for you.
Yeah, we'll scour around and see who we can find. That would be nice. We want what we can do to help students, so. Thank you. Any other public comments? Okay. We have closed meeting items, so we need a motion.
Yes, we have 2 hearings.
Okay.
I move we go into closed meeting for the purpose of holding hearings.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Do we have a scout back there on the back?
For the board's information, there's some food, some crackers, and some.